Hello and welcome to another edition of the Planet IRL podcast for the week of April 12th, 2010. As we look back this week and put a bow on the iZot IndyCar Series event this past weekend at Barber Motorsports Park, preview this coming weekend's action on the streets of Long Beach for the 36th annual Toyota Grand Prix of Long Beach, which of course my partner in crime, Steph, will be on site again in Southern California this weekend. So I'm joined this week by Steph, and we're going to start by finishing off the weekend at Barber. Steph, what do you have for general impressions of the Barber event this past weekend?
Very different impressions than you, I have no doubt. I thought it was not a barn burner like the first two were, but I thought it was a perfectly acceptable race. We were being told all along in the days leading up to it that it was not going to be very exciting. There wasn't going to be a lot of passing. Really, we saw a fair amount of passing, and some of it was even up at the front. And I know that there are a lot of people out there who are not fans of fuel mileage races. I don't think that every race on the schedule should be a fuel mileage race, but I think that the odd one is a good demonstration of teams' technical and strategic prowess, as opposed to putting all of the emphasis on the drivers all the time. And I found it fascinating that up until about the last 10 laps or so, we really didn't know who was going to win that race. So on a scale of 1 to 10, I would give it a 7. Not fantastic, not the worst race we're going to see this year.
Well, you hit the nail on the head when saying that you disagreed with me, because let me tell you, I have not been that bored watching an IndyCar race in I don't know how long.
Come on, it wasn't that bad.
To me, this was like the extremely complex, intense mystery movie that you get in halfway on. If you weren't on top of the pit strategy from the drop of the green flag, then there was absolutely nothing to hold your attention in this race.
So be on top of the pit strategy from the drop of the green flag. What were you doing? Why weren't you watching the race like a good iZot IndyCar fan?
Because of another southern event going on a couple hundred miles.
Let me hear about this now. So you are a contributor on an IndyCar blog, and you were watching the Masters?
Maybe.
I see how it is.
You have to understand, in my mind, the Masters is still a distant, but is still second in my annual eventage, if you will, sporting events. I mean, it is number two behind Indianapolis when it comes to tradition, to every athlete wants to win that event. If there's an event a golfer wants to win, and you'll have some people across either pond say they might want to win the Open Championship, the British Open, as we would call it. But by and large, you survey professional golfers, 9 out of 10 of them are going to say, I want to win the Masters.
Okay,
just in the same way as anyone who's ever put their right foot down in a car said, I want to win the Indianapolis 500. So,
okay,
you know,
but
IndyCar
do you
was,
not own a PVR?
I do. That's how I kind of watch most of the IndyCar.
There's no excuse anymore for not being able to watch the broadcast from start to finish, because everybody in America has, except me, has a PVR.
Well, you're not in America.
Well, everybody in North America.
But no, I just found it. There was so little passing, and usually you expect street courses to be the ones that don't have much passing. But
that is such a misnomer.
It is a misnomer.
Well-built street course has tons of good passing if it's got good passing zones built into it.
Right. No. And that's where I was going with this. I mean, the stereotype, if you will, is that street courses tend to be parades in the concrete canyons. But Sao Paulo and St. Pete were both great races. Then we get to this, you know, beautiful, sprawling, natural terrain road course, and it was nothing. People dogged Richmond last year because it took the leaders, you know, who knows how many laps it was. It was like 20 laps to get past the back markers. Mm. Well, how long did Marco Andretti sit there behind Graham Rahal? Never got past him. Now, granted, he probably wasn't trying real hard, but Elio wasn't trying apparently very hard to get past Marco. They were just driving around. It got very boring and slow. You knew Marco wasn't going to make it on fuel. So the only hope and exciting thing was wondering if Simona was actually going to keep her foot on the clutch or bring out a yellow flag with, what was it, like 6 laps, 8 laps to go at the end? I forget exactly when it was.
Okay, I have two thoughts on this. My first thought is that it breaks my heart that at some point in the last 15 years, so many open wheel fans have lost the ability to appreciate a good high-speed chess game. It breaks my heart because it's an aspect of the sport that has always been fascinating to me and many others, and I just don't know where or when the disconnect happened, but there's a huge section of the fan base, and you're obviously a very well-educated fan, and you're a part of it, that has completely lost the ability to appreciate this aspect of the sport, and it really bothers me. And the second thought that I have on that is that we knew all along that Barber was not a track that was designed for cars. It was designed for bikes, and so it's got long, sweeping turns, no real hard braking zones, and we've seen, particularly from St. Pete and Sao Paulo this year, but in general, these cars really like a track that's got good, solid, hard braking zones for passing to generate a good competitive race. My understanding is that George Barber was supposed to be making some alterations to the track leading up to the race and didn't. And I know that there are conversations going on now about whether that should be done before next year, and he doesn't seem to think it needs to be, but I suspect that he'll be told that he's wrong on that. And so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I don't know that we'll see the track be in exactly the same configuration next year, and so you may get a little bit more of your wish, but it still bothers me that people can look at that race and not see what skill or incorrect reasoning came into play and made things fascinating. I mean, look at Marco and taking the wrong fuel strategy. Oh, and also the fact that the fuel knob is out. And that brings a whole other level of appreciation into a fuel strategy race this year that hasn't been there in the past, because a driver actually has to work for it. Elio made that race on two stops, and he had to work for it.
Yeah, from that standpoint, you know, I'm not as much someone that's going to complain about fuel mileage race as other people. You know, look at Miami last year. I thought that was
a great race.
I thought
so
it was a great race too, but there's a difference though, because you knew that Dixon and Briscoe were running as hard as they could possibly run there. Dixon was trying to make Briscoe make a mistake. Briscoe was trying to make Dixon make a mistake. Fast forward to this past weekend, we knew Marco wasn't going to make it. Everyone knew he wasn't going to make it. But
I don't know if that's true. There seemed to be an awful lot of people that were hoping for that yellow.
If it was going to be a real shot in the dark,
that it would be long enough for it to actually
right,
make
okay,
difference.
Yeah. If he had yellow, he could have made it. Okay, I'll give you that. But if it went green, there was no way he was going to make it. Now, I appreciate a good road race, even if there's, you know, not a whole lot of passing, but where the following driver is all over is really pushing the lead driver to make a mistake. You know, he's darting here, darting there, right on his gearbox, coming out of every corner, going into the corner. There was none of that in this race. Elio was just hanging back, taking it easy, saving fuel. You know, Dixon's behind him, not really pressuring. Luckily, you had Will, who got shuffled back on some unfortunate pit strategy, and Justin Wilson. Those two were able to make a few passes here and there. And you had a rolling chicane in Milka, which, you know, made some exciting three-wide split passing for TV. But there was nothing that indicated the drivers were even trying to push each other to make a mistake.
They were working on saving fuel, which, with the knob out, is an equally important skill. And there's a lot more to the sport than just passes that look good on TV. That's the point that I'm trying to emphasize here.
But I don't think the fans now, certainly not now, and I don't think they were really beforehand, we can go back 20, 25 years, nobody was really that excited about just watching guys make laps and trying to make fuel mileage at the end. If that's the case, let's add another 10 laps to this so there's no way anyone can make it on two stops.
Well, and that's a possible way to look at it.
Or go 10 laps either way. I mean, either add 10 or take away 10 so that, you know, you either can do it pretty easily or there's no way that you can do it.
I don't know. I enjoy the drama of, is he going to make it or isn't he? I think that that's equally valid as as an exciting reason to watch a race. And if your justification for that is that fans these days don't know how to appreciate that, I say let's educate them, because there is a lot more to the sport than pretty looking passes on TV.
Yeah, there is more to passing, but you also need to keep the attention of the viewer. And watching a fuel mileage race doesn't bring in the casual viewer.
Well, I don't want this sport to turn into this sort of contrived action that NASCAR tries to generate either. And
no,
it's a fine
no,
line to walk.
Right. No, I wouldn't say, you know, contrived action by any stretch of the imagination. I don't want that. But we've seen already this year that you can have good competitive racing, whether you talk about pit strategy or passing on the track. And I think most people would prefer to have the action they saw in the previous street courses, then they would prefer that more than they would to see a race like we saw last weekend.
Sure, but I mean, various factors can come into play with that too. Has there ever in the history of open wheel racing on this continent been a season where every single race was fantastic?
No, you're right.
And so there are going to be some that are great and there are going to be some that aren't. And there are going to be some that are on great tracks that should be great that still aren't because there are other factors that come in. I mean, who knows how great this race would have been if it had rained this weekend.
True.
There are all kinds of factors that can come into play. And I don't think that we need to start clawing at the walls because we've had one race that wasn't as exciting as the other ones have been. I mean, it wasn't a snorer. It wasn't terrible. I don't think we need to panic just yet. I think that maybe we need to wait till after Long Beach and then we can start to panic. But
right. I don't think we're ready to panic either. I was just bored. I mean, yeah, like you said, you have some winners, you have some losers. Texas last year, that should be a great race. We've seen it be a great race. Last year was pretty much a snoozer. Like you said, you have some winners, you have some losers. You give this one a 7, I'd fill out your 10 and probably give it a 3.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, I think we've probably beaten this topic to death, so let's move on, shall we?
Let's move on. Absolutely.
Okay. That pretty much covers Barber, doesn't it?
For the most part, I do believe it does. But before, let's put a bow on that, though, because that does bring us to one of our questions this week from submitted by our fan, Christy.
Our fan, our one fan.
No,
yay!
I think we have two fans, so I'll give a shout-out to our friend Andy, who posts on Twitter as Curling Racer. I know he listens to our podcast a lot, so.
Oh, well, and there's Spike, too.
Spike, absolutely. Yes, Spike.
Spike Rogan. He's a great listener.
He is a great listener, and I enjoyed when Spike invited us to be on the Sports Overnight America a couple times in the last couple weeks. So we certainly appreciate that, and I know. So that's three of them.
Hopefully we'll build up more as time goes on. So Christy has actually submitted two questions for us this week. So let's start with the first one. Since there was so little passing at the track, how much effect did Dixon gaining spots at the start and then being forced to give those spots back have on his chances of winning? And do you agree with race control on making him give those spots back or with Dixon that he fairly took the spots? Well, my take is that there's no question that it had a huge impact on Dixon taking the win, and he said as much in his post-race interview. I don't think I've ever seen him as emotional in a post-race interview. He was quite adamant that he had lost the race on that decision. And as for whether I agree or disagree with race control, I have to confess, I haven't seen the replay. I haven't seen the move since the start of the race, but I would be surprised if race control would make a move like that if it wasn't legitimate. And if the move was made before Dixon reached the start finish line, then it's legitimate. And those are the rules, and he knows that going in. So that's my take.
I did see the video today on YouTube, and there's a bit of confusion on really what happened here. Dixon was very upset because he passed Elio after the start-finish line going into turn one, which is true.
Right, but he made the first move before he crossed the start-finish line to put him behind Elio, right?
Exactly. The infraction was that he passed Marco before the start-finish line. Dixon was starting fifth in inside row three, while Marco was outside row two in the fourth position. Clearly, Dixon crossed the start-finish line before Marco Andretti, which is a violation of the rules. It says, you know, specifically at the start of a race, you must cross the line in your position and, you know, maintain the order, which is a crappy rule. But
well, I was just going to say that brings up the subject of, is it a crappy rule?
It is a crappy rule.
As soon as you see the green, you should be good to go.
Right. The rule sucks, but the rule is the rule. It's been the rule for, you know, quite some time now. But the fact that he passed Marco is where he got the violation, and then he went on and passed Elio. The ruling was that he had to get back in line behind Marco. So that's where the violation went and why he had to give up two spots. He wasn't penalized for either. He was just moved back to his position.
And that's perfectly fair.
Perfectly fair. And, you know, whether it affected his race or not, you know, well, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, turn one of a 90-lap race. You know.
Yeah, but on a track where it is so difficult to pass, I can see that having a huge effect cascading through the entire race.
Right. Well, I mean, he shouldn't have been in the third position in the first place.
No, definitely.
So maybe it affected him, but, you know.
Them's the breaks.
Point your finger at qualifying fifth instead of third.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get to Christy's second question. And I like this one. Did you notice the amount of airtime Janica did not receive this weekend? No in-car camera, and we really only saw her when she spun late in the race. I've heard people suggesting that they didn't put Janica on the air as much because she's probably heading to NASCAR soon, instead putting the spotlight on others so the league won't feel the impact of her leaving. Just wondering what your thoughts were. I think it was versus just doing a good job covering all the drivers and not just her, and nothing to do with her leaving. You go first this time.
I credit Versus for getting the spotlight off of her a bit. Interestingly, taking that NASCAR angle real quick, it just was on SpeedTV.com late this afternoon, this evening, that Kasey Kahne is looking to take over the number five ride over in the Cup side of Mark Martin's, which could be significant to the IndyCar series because that's the ride that right now is kind of rumored that Danica is going to slot into. Either during or after the 2011 season. So if Kasey Kahne ends up going there next year, it makes Danica's movement there maybe just a little bit more up in the air, although her results on the road course in IndyCar this year certainly aren't going to prohibit her from going to NASCAR. In terms of what we saw this weekend, absolutely, I applaud Versus for starting to treat her like another driver. Not like, you know, we want to see interviews and we want to be kept up to date with what's going on with the 18th place driver all the time. She wasn't a factor in the race. She wasn't a factor all weekend. She didn't do anything that merited attention any more than, you know, a typical 13th to 18th place driver. So I was very pleased that, you know, now she's starting to be recognized more as just a driver who, I mean, let's face it, she hasn't been strong on the road courses this year.
Sure. And I mean, if NASCAR and its broadcasters want to play that game where they're going to focus on her and regardless of how well she's doing, then I say leave them to it. And building our own stars is definitely the right thing to do, especially possibly Simona.
Well, and you can already look at the NASCAR web boards, and you can see they're already disgruntled with the coverage she's receiving for, you know.
You spend a lot of time on NASCAR web boards, Paul?
I go there occasionally. Hey, knock off my NASCAR and my Masters loving this weekend. Not that I have NASCAR love, but, you know, I like to stay a little bit educated.
It's probably not a bad idea.
A little bit. Yeah. I don't spend too much time there. So, okay, Christy, we certainly thank you for those questions this week, and we'll look forward to a new batch for next week. So be sure to send something controversial so Steph and I can fight. We've been told we need more snark because Steph and I agree too often. So a little bit of something for us to disagree on. You know
we're getting a PT question next
week. I was just going to say it. Otherwise, we're going to have to talk about Paul Tracy next week. And I know Christy has some questions on that, so hopefully we'll have something there. All right, let's shift gears. Let's leave Barber in the dust now, thankfully. Let's move on to the news of today. Before we get to Long Beach, let's go with the news of today. Finally, the IndyCar series, or the Indy Racing League, officially announced the panel members, the committee members on the Iconic Committee, the Innovative Competitive Open Wheel New Industry-Relevant Cost-Effective Advisory Committee. We already knew that Gilles de Ferran had been selected by the owners as their representative. There had been strong, if not confirmed, close enough to confirmed, rumors that Eddie Gossage, the president at Texas Motor Speedway, was going to participate in this. So there were still five spots available. Those today were rounded out. Brian Barnhart, obviously president of competition, the Indy Racing League. Tony Purnell, who came formerly from the Jaguar Formula One team. Neil Ressler, also formerly of Jaguar and Formula One, also been with Ford at various times and is a suspension and steering guru. Tony Kottmann, which will make Robin Miller supremely happy. And Rick Long, who was instrumental in the Speedway engine development company that was very instrumental in the late 90s when the engine builders were a much more significant part of the IndyCar community. So, Steph, what's your opinions on these so far?
I have a great deal of confidence in this committee, and whatever they select, I will accept because these people are much more knowledgeable than me. And apart from that, I mean, Gilles de Ferran is a fantastic choice as a driver and team owner representative. Everybody has a great deal of confidence in him and his ability to be impartial. Eddie Gossage, who's going to question that he's the right guy to be sitting in the promoter seat? And putting Brian Barnhart and Tony Kottmann on the committee was just a stroke of brilliance, because there's no way that anybody can be unhappy.
Do you say that with a straight face?
Well, I mean, we are talking about open wheel fans, and they'll always find something to complain about, right? But if you had just had Brian Barnhart sitting there or just Tony Kottmann, there would be a faction that could sit and complain that the results of the committee's findings were not completely impartial. And I don't think that that can be said with the selections that have been made here. So I am quite pleased.
I agree. I think it's a very broad cross-section, which I think is what Randy Bernard really wanted. He wanted folks that specialized in different areas and could really speak to different aspects of the future car. You know, like you said, Eddie, it's going to be interesting to see what Eddie Gossage's take on this is, because he's the only one that's really coming to this, not looking at it from a technical standpoint. Eddie is going to look at it solely from what can I sell to the public. Eddie knows how to put people in his seats. Eddie Gossage is probably I don't think it's a very thin limb to say that Eddie Gossage is the best auto sports promoter in the country. You know, he finds ways to keep his market or his track in the public eye. Look no further than his April Fool's gag this year. So he's going to do things that are not only, you know, by doing it for the best interest of Texas Motor Speedway, by extension becomes a good selling point for the IndyCar series, because Eddie really knows what it is that can sell. So it's going to be interesting to see what his take on that is. And we're hoping to have Eddie Gossage on our podcast here in the next couple of weeks to see what his, if he can share any of those opinions with us. But yeah, there's a lot of technical folks who there's a lot of experience in these other six gentlemen. What's missing that I noticed right away is there doesn't seem to be anyone yet who's a real champion of the Delta Wing group here. I was a little bit surprised that when Gilles de Ferran was selected as the owner's representative, you know, with all the people who are supposedly behind the Delta Wing, I was a little bit surprised that we didn't see someone who is a little more forward with that group selected to this committee by them.
I have nothing to add. I think we've pretty much covered everything there is to be said about that. Good luck and Godspeed to them, and let's hear from them in 90 days.
We will definitely look forward to hearing what they say, and hopefully we'll be given a timetable in the not-too-distant future. We know the report is due early to mid-June, but we still haven't been told when we should expect Randy Bernard to act on that recommendation. And again, this is the ultimate deliverable of this group is a recommendation to Randy Bernard.
Who will be making the final choice. These people are not the ones that are making the final choice.
But you have to assume that Randy's going to go with whatever this group says.
Unless he has an extremely compelling reason not to, which we would be fascinated to hear about.
Right. I would. That's the type of, you know, that compelling argument for going against this group kind of defeats the purpose of the group. The group is, you know, to find out what is in the best interest of the league across all different aspects here. So I'd find it very unlikely that Randy will go against the recommendation of this committee.
I agree, but only time will tell.
Stranger things have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, let's go ahead and move on then to this coming weekend where the IZOD IndyCar Series visits Long Beach for the historic Grand Prix there. Steph, do we have any reason to believe that we're not looking at Will Power and Dario Franchitti ruling this race this year?
I think that everyone is expecting to see Will at the front and we'll be very surprised if he's not. I still keep waiting for Justin to be the dark horse, though. He hasn't shown up yet this year nearly as much as we've been expecting, and he's waiting in the wings, and this might very well be the week where he comes up to not, I don't even want to say surprise everyone, because we all know it's coming. I think this may be the week where we see it happen. If not, we're waiting until the Glen, I guess.
Well, he did have a second place finish. Was that St. Pete?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would say it's not exactly like he's not getting it done. He just hasn't.
Well, he is getting it done, but I want to see him in the winner's circle, darn it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. So I know I know that would make the folks at Dreyer and Reinbold extremely happy. And, you know, they've worked so hard for so long to get to the point where they are now, where they're really knocking on the door. And boy, I sure hope it happens soon for him. I really do.
I do. In terms of Will, though, going back to that, I have to confess that even though it gives me great satisfaction to know that I picked him to win the championship and that he's done a great job of putting a strong showing out so far, I'm a little bit worried. If he keeps winning, it could be bad news because people are going to tune out if he becomes too dominant. We don't want to have a Jimmy Johnson on our hands.
No, certainly not. But again, let's remember with this goofy schedule, everything is so compartmentalized that, you know, right now we're wearing out the right turns. And then, you know, as soon as this race is over, we start wearing out the left-hand turns for the next, you know, 6 weeks or so until we wrap up at Iowa, you know, the middle of June. We don't go to another road course until after that. So if there is a place where, you know, most people think Will come back to Earth, it is on the oval. So this could be the last dominating race I think we see from Will.
It could be, but he's driving a Penske. So we should not discount him completely on the ovals.
No. Certainly I'm not going to discount him, but I think he'll come back to reality over the next few races. Remember, Kansas, when we get there in a couple weeks, and we'll preview this next week, that race, it seems like, has been a Ganassi stronghold for the last several years. Weldon won a couple snoozers there. Dixon's won a couple there. He just kind of ran away, or at least one where he kind of ran away with it, got back on track last year. So I look for them to be strong once we turn the corner here. But, you know, I think it's hard to bet against him this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And Dario, remember, Dario came back last year. This was only his second race back, and he ended up winning last year.
And Dario's always been a monster on street courses. You can't ever count him out.
Absolutely. Dario was Will Power 10 years ago. And, you know, he's even in his adventure over to NASCAR, he still came back and is one of the best road course racers out there in the IndyCar series today. So those are my two picks to run up front this weekend. And I think I'm for my fantasy league on the IndyCar.com website, I went ahead and bit the bullet and used one of my 6 week picks for both of those guys. I think they better pull through.
I think I've already used Will twice, so I'm in trouble.
Uh-oh. Now, from a race standpoint, though, you were saying earlier you don't expect this one to race like St. Pete or Sao Paulo.
No, I mean, it'll be a great race just because it's Long Beach, and we'll get into this in more detail later, but I'm going to this one for the first time, so there's no way I'm going to get back from this race. You guys are going to be talking me down off cloud nine for days, so it's going to be pretty hard for me to come back from this one and think that it's a bad show regardless of what happens, but I certainly don't expect it to be quite as thrilling of a demonstration of what a street course can be as Sao Paulo and St. Pete were. But I mean, it will be a good race. And you were saying, a little bit earlier on that you think it'll show better than what you felt Barber was. I hesitate to say I think it'll be about as good because I don't want you to not tune in, but in my estimation, I'm expecting about the same amount of raciness and I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I'm curious then, what is it that makes this street course not as racy as what we saw at St. Pete? Because St. Pete has a lot of slow corners, a lot of the right angle turns. They even have a hairpin coming toward the main straightaway. So what is it that's really different about this race that traditionally it doesn't race as well?
The thing that St. Pete has going for it, and the reason that I miss Cleveland so very much, is that massive straightaway going into turn one with the airport runway. There's nothing like watching IndyCars go 3, 4, 5, 6 wide going into the first turn of the race. It's just heart-stopping. And Long Beach, for a long time, hasn't had that kind of straightaway. So, there's always the legendary hairpin, right? But there's something about these cars in particular too that they just really like those long straights with the hard braking zones, like I was saying earlier. And Long Beach doesn't provide that quite as well as the first two street courses we saw this year. So it's not completely terrible. I mean, there is a longish straight on the front straight, but it just doesn't seem to quite have the same pizzazz to it that the long straights at Sao Paulo and St. Pete did.
Mm. You know, we both agreed that Will and Dario were going to be tough to beat this weekend, and then you just mentioned turn one. Let's take the other side of the coin there. Who do we see as being the most likely to not make it toward turn two, if you will, this weekend?
Is it terrible that the first name that pops into my head is Sato?
I was either going to say him or his teammate.
I can't believe typecasted him already, but he seems to be the one now that goes toward the bottom of my confidence picks. I feel terrible for KB. They've had so many problems this year. And Barber wasn't even their fault. It was a snap throttle cable. So
yeah, just, and that's such a weird thing.
It is. You don't see cars just slow on the track like that very often anymore. So It was really bizarre to watch, and KB has just had the worst luck. It's really, really terrible for them. After I think most analysts were looking at the season thinking that they were going to come forward really strong, especially in the beginning with the strong road course representation they should have with Sato and Viso and to some degree Marias. So
it's, yeah, you mentioned the goofy throttle cable snap at Barber, and remember at St. Pete they had a transmission or a gearbox go out. These are
right,
bulletproof gearboxes. Then they get that Viso fixed, and then all of a sudden he's just totally innocent and gets nailed by a passing Dan Weldon whose car.
Oh no, that was Marias that got.
That was Marias. You're right. You're right. I'm sorry.
So that was how the third car got taken that day, because Sato, that was the situation where Sato had been begging for laps to come in because he felt like something was going off with the tires, and then he put it into the tires.
That's right.
That was a three for that weekend for them.
Ooh, if they didn't have their bad luck, they'd have no luck.
Seriously.
So hopefully they can turn around, and hopefully they can survive the first corner, because I think right now there's, you say Sato, I say Marias, but... Mm. Unfortunately, the confidence in that team right now is a little low. So hopefully they'll hopefully they'll get through it.
Hopefully.
So,
well, so on a final note, I, like I mentioned, I'm going to be there this weekend. Yay! I'm so excited. I've never been to Long Beach, and
I'll be in Illinois.
I'm looking forward to providing the same level of coverage that I was providing in St. Pete. I will be blogging more or less constantly, driving my friends nuts, and I'll work on my tweet tan. Did you guys see my tweet tan?
That was nice.
With the bent elbows and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still got it. It's going to take me months to fade this out.
You looked like the tomato from the VeggieTales, whatever his name was.
Well, I've learned my lesson now. The Canadian girl who's been hiding away from the sun for 5 months should probably put sunscreen on before she goes outside in Florida or California, where there is actual sunlight and reasonable temperatures.
Wise, wise idea.
It would. So keep an eye on planetirl.com this weekend for the blog posts, and also at 99 Forever, I'll be tweeting like a mad person. And I will also be at the Swift Tour on Friday morning, and I will provide coverage of that as well. And I guess we should talk about the tour of Swift, Paul.
Yeah, and friends at Swift, Rachel Nichols, who tweets as Pink Janeer with the lovely pink hair.
I can't wait to meet her. She just seems like she's going to be so cool.
She does. She seems like she's a fun girl. Hopefully she makes it to Indy or some of the other non-tropical places I get to go to this year. Yeah, Swift has opened up their doors to the IndyCar Series fans. Their home base in San Clemente, which is about an hour, we're told, from the course at Long Beach, south right down the Pacific Coast Highway. And they're opening their doors to the fans to kind of see what it is that Swift does on a day-to-day basis, kind of tour their facilities. I would hope that they may be able to show some of their cars that they have, historic cars, and some of their current cars that they have in production right now.
Cool.
They made some couple beautiful cars for the FedEx Champ Car Series back in the late 90s that I know Michael Andretti and the Newman Haas team drove. In fact, they won their first races, if I recall, at Miami in 97. I may be off a year or so on that, but I'm pretty sure Michael Andretti won his first race out with that car. So hopefully some of those cars will be on display, and folks there at Swift will be able to answer questions from fans. Like Steph said, that is a 9 o'clock Pacific Coast time.
I think it's 8 o'clock, actually.
Is it 8 o'clock?
I believe it is. But if there are any fans that are going to be out there this weekend who'd be interested in joining in, the details are all on a post at swiftengineering.blogspot.com, and you can check out the details there. I'm pretty sure it's 8 to 9 because she wanted to give us time to get back up to the track for the 10:15 IndyCar practice. So check it out, and if you can make it, send an email to info@swiftengineering.com, and Rachel will take care of you, and I will see you on Friday morning. And for those who can't make it, I will be providing coverage to the best of my ability so that you can feel as though you were there to join us.
But we won't be.
No. Sorry. I'm doing my best to make you feel better, Paul. Come on.
I'll enjoy the Iowa race. You go to California and Florida. I should be at Miami, though, so at least that'll... And hopefully it won't be as hot as the surface of the sun this year, but
yeah, that was beyond tropical. That was the gates of hell.
Yes.
And on that note, I think that's everything that we set out to cover this week. So Paul, thank you for joining me as always. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to speaking with you again next week to review Long Beach and look forward to the race at Kansas,
the first oval race of the year.
Indeed. And remember, listeners, thank you for tuning in, and planetirl.com is your source online for blogs, podcasts, photos, and more covering the IZOD IndyCar Series and beyond.